We have this wonderful opportunity to dramatically change the way government works, and it's up against these kind of old procedures and old processes and old approaches, which actually reduce the value of the public servant and therefore reduce the value of services to the public.
The concept of a civil service traces back more than 2,000 years to when the Qin Dynasty established a centralized bureaucracy in China. By the time of the Song Dynasty, about 1,000 years later, the system had been amended to include training and a test to weed out patronage. It wasn't until the late 19th century that the concept caught on in the West, ironically around the same time it was abolished in China. The civil service was a solution to the corruption and political patronage that had become rampant at every level of government, and the institution of a professional class of government workers provided stability throughout the 20th century. But those bureaucracies weren't without their problems. Rigid adherence to rules and regulations often overshadowed citizen needs, and adaptability and experimentation was discouraged. Now that we've entered a new technological era, some, including today's guest, are questioning whether governments, especially city governments, aren't poised for a completely new way of operating. Hello and welcome to the Harvard Kennedy School PolicyCast. I'm your host, Matt Cadwallader, and joining us today is HKS Professor Stephen Goldsmith, Director of the Innovations in American Government Program out of the Kennedy School's Ash Center. He's the co-author of the book, A New City OS, The Power of Open, Collaborative, and Distributed Governance. Professor Goldsmith, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So, in this book, you propose a complete rethinking of how municipal governments operate, from hierarchical system to more of a distributed one. Can you describe it a little bit?
Right. Well, we have a society that's very distributed. Folks are used to doing things on platforms, whether the platform is Facebook or whatever the case may be. And we have a large number of new technological advancements that take advantage of that platforming. Yeah, we've got a government that was designed over a century ago, right? I mean, we came out of Tammany Hall, a lot of corruption. The way we managed to reduce corruption was control mechanisms and hierarchical controls and lots of restrictions on the way that public employees do work. So now we have this wonderful opportunity to dramatically change the way government works, and it's up against these kind of old procedures and old processes and old approaches, which actually reduce the value of the public servant and therefore reduce the value of services to the public.
You seem to describe kind of three generations of municipal government model over the last, say, 200 years or so, or even really in the last century or so. You just mentioned Tammany Hall. What was that progression over time?
Well, so we went from a period of unlimited discretion, a.k.a. corruption, right? Mayors hired their buddies and gave contracts to their friends and the like. And then we corrected that with a set of civil service reforms that were designed to reduce corruption and labor contracts that aided in that, and a very kind of formalistic approach to government. That worked in the sense that we now were able to produce more routine activities, like the same exact widget every day, manufactured theoretically from a competition that picked the best vendor, right? Mm-hmm. But that vendor was picked on activities, not on quality. So the whole system was based on, we're going to measure your activities, whether you're a public employee or you're a vendor, and the number of those activities is our definition of success. Well, of course, many of those activities didn't lead to outcomes or even outputs that make sense. So then we go to this kind of reform effort that says, well, we're going to, you know, reinvent government. We're going to be a little more entrepreneurial. We're going to ask for innovation in government. And that was and I was actually, you know, part of that kind of wave and pretty excited about it.
When you were mayor of Indianapolis.
When I was mayor of Indianapolis, mm-hmm. Right? And so, but now we have, that was reform in an analog world, right? That was innovation in an analog world. That was innovation that said, your job is public works to manage the trash pickup, and you're going to get more creative in the way you do that. Now along comes a digital revolution, right, that says we can look at data across agencies. We can look deeply at outliers. We can predict which employees are working best. We can help our employees exercise their discretion better. We have a number of ways that we can talk about as we go through the show today. But though all of that excitement now still is layered on top of this old operating system. And we found across the country, we visited, you know, over 100 cities, that the cities that were innovative because they were working around their structure of government. They had set up a special office. They had a separate agency, not because they were able to reform. So the purpose of the book is to say, this is a new operating system of government. This will unleash the technology and will unleash the talents of your employees.
Mm-hmm. You open up the book with an example of New York City with the Mayor de Blasio's rollout of the pre-K education system. Can you describe what happened there?
Yeah, so we use UPK in New York City for the purposes of showing what a distributed platform would look like. Because, you know, in this country today, we're kind of in a fight between, well, this is a public activity, this is a private activity, we're not going to privatize this and or the like, depending on which side of that you're on. Well, any complicated, well-executed strategy involves public, private, and nonprofit. So in New York, when Mayor de Blasio, I worked for Mayor Bloomberg, Mayor de Blasio took over, and one of his key campaign promises was universal pre-K, right? He was going to stand that up very, very quickly. So how do you do that? We have to identify places where those school pre-K could occur, right? So but they have to be safe, and so that means they have to be inspected. So there's a role of government to make sure that, maybe they're in government schools, meaning public schools, maybe they're in nonprofits, but either place they have to be safe. So the role of the city, right? So then you have to reach out to parents, right? And how do you get to parents? Well, maybe social media, and then you reach out to parents, but then parents need information on where the schools are, and eventually, as the schools get deployed, the quality of those schools, right? So then you begin to think about, this is really a distributed system. We have public school, we have pre-K in public schools, we have pre-K in non-public schools. We have parents making choices among the schools. We have a role for the city. And so we use that example to say, think about the delivering of government services as a platform of distributed services, and UPK, preschool in New York City, is a great example. And in fact, in record time, Mayor de Blasio got that up and running, and with pretty good reviews by virtually everybody.
One thing that I found really interesting about it wasn't just the distributed model and the technical part that allowed it to happen, but it seemed to have a cultural change element about it. We kind of think about bureaucrats as, you know, kind of pencil pushers, that stereotype. But you highlighted a number of civil servants who really took on the project, put it on their shoulders.
Right. So, I mean, your question is a good one, because in this story, there are people in jobs that didn't exist. The jobs didn't exist before. A chief innovation officer, right, whose job it is to set this up. Somebody who thinks about the design, the user design of the services. So those in public employees acted in a more entrepreneurial fashion. However, their entrepreneurial energies would not have been successful had they tried to do it all inside the four walls of government, right? In a traditional sense, there wouldn't have been enough classrooms, there wouldn't have been enough teachers, there wouldn't have been enough information. It would have been taken too long for each of the inspections to occur. So this thinking about entrepreneurial activity, but inside a networked government, is really pretty exciting.
Mm. So one of the reasons that the civil service emerged was to prevent corruption. The whole idea of, you know, being adherence to rules and regulations, that was all about preventing waste, fraud, abuse. Mm-hmm. How in this new distributed model is there a check on that type of corruption?
This is a very important question, and one that we should watch carefully. So the check 10 years ago was lots of rules, procurement rules and civil service rules. So we're suggesting more discretion. So you're a field worker, maybe child protective service or whatever, and you are now going to get on your handheld or tablet not only more digital information, but organized with decision support systems like, so does a child have a broken left arm? Did any of her siblings have broken arms? Or, oh, by the way, we have a report from the emergency room of another family member who had a similar injury. So you're providing information to the field. Now, if we're going to give discretion, then there has been a thought that discretion and accountability were trade-offs. You could give people discretion, but you would lose accountability because they could exercise discretion different ways. But actually, in a new digital world, that's not really true, because we can see from her GPS stamp, the Child Protective Service worker or the asphalt pothole worker or fill in the blank, how long they were on the site. We can see what decisions they made. We can see whether they're outliers and taking too many children out of the home or not enough children out of the home. We can see whether the language they've used in their comments. We can evaluate the sentiment, actually, machine evaluate the sentiment in those comments to say, you know, were they making one set of decisions for African-American kids and another set of decisions for white kids, and do they need more training, right? So the point of this is we can both concurrently now give more discretion to the field and hold people accountable, because we can evaluate much more precisely the results of their work and their attitudes.
Part of this is about encouraging the kind of entrepreneurial spirit of these individual workers without having to get that top-down directive. Do you think that kind of having them their work be tracked that closely, the kind of the GPS tracking and tracking how they're what they're writing in their comments, mm-hmm. do you think that might have an kind of a anti-effect there?
Right. Well, it could. I mean, I've been in local government for 25 years, and I have a deeply held view that most people are in local government because they actually want to serve. I mean, they're not there because they want to earn big money, right? They're there because they want to serve. And most of them actually get frustrated because they can't really serve because they're too busy doing these kind of commodity, mindless activities. So I think to the extent that we give them more discretion, they'll be more excited. Now, your question, though, is important in the following sense. We need to use this increased visibility into their work for purposes of training and assistance. Sure, there are going to be some bad actors that need to be weeded out. But if, you know, if the 98% or 99 or 95 or whatever it is of the public workforce that's well-intentioned can be trained with the results of this information, I think we can create a culture of initiative. But you could very well have a anxiety about kind of a gotcha environment, and that will be an important thing to manage.
Another thing that comes up on this is cost. Of course, any kind of distributed system that is based on technology requires significant IT resources. Do you see this as a situation where there would be private vendors that municipalities would reach out to create these systems, or is it up to kind of individual cities to build their own systems?
Well, this is an important question and obstacle, because a fair amount of the money that we spend today in cities and states doesn't produce the objective it's supposed to, right? So a dollar of input, do we get a dollar of output? Not necessarily. Not because of corruption or ineptness, just because that activity doesn't – the input activity doesn't produce that. So it's clear we could save a lot of money and or repurpose dollars to higher and better use. So that seems clear. But it does take some money and talent to put in these systems. Now, I think that the barriers to entry have been reduced through cloud services and SaaS process pricing, right? So mm-hmm. that a vendor can say, I will set this up and run it for you for 5 years. I'm going to charge you on a per user basis so that a medium-sized city doesn't have a huge, you know, when I was mayor of Indianapolis and we were doing a lot of technical stuff, but a long time ago, you know, those were really big price tags to implement a system. I mean, really big price tags. Here, the price is not insignificant, but it also can be calibrated to the size of the organization, to the number of users. It can be amortized over a period of time. So I do think there's a pretty significant role for the vendor community in bringing technology to cities and then reducing the cost of uptake.
So you do see that there is significant savings by implementing these types of
There's definitely significant savings. The savings aren't on day one, but the costs are, right? So you have to figure out how you're going to do that.
Do you think that this is is this something that is helpful for all city services, or are there particular areas where there are benefits and other areas where, you know, a hierarchical system suits it just fine?
Well, there's a number of ways to think about this that we've mentioned in the book. We call it the new operating system for cities because, A, if cities organize themselves around their residents/users' experience, they'll become more responsive. And that responsiveness is important. And that goes across every city agency. So your question actually can be answered depending on kind of how one thinks about it. So reorganizing city government around the UX of the citizen, which we mentioned in the book in a chapter in multiple ways, is really important. Personalization and omnichannel choices and the like. Predictive analytics, which is another form of the digital revolution applied to cities, which says we're going to try to figure out where the pothole is before it occurs. We're going to try to figure out where the pipe's going to break or the streetlight's going to go out. We're going to try to figure out where the next child's going to be abused rather than the last child. Those predictive analytics are relatively complicated, relatively expensive. They require information sharing agreements and the like. But so that conversation, I think, requires city county leadership to look at their most important targets of opportunity. Some may be fiscal, like who's not paying their taxes. Others may be human services, who's getting hurt, who could be most helped. And another way to think about that is the purpose here is not just to hold the employees accountable, it's to hold the third-party contracts/vendors accountable. Are those vendors producing the results that they should be producing? So I think that it really depends what you look at. We talk in the book about just-in-time. That's a concept to us that seems relevant to use the digital power to change the way we regulate and permit to dramatically reduce the time of doing those things. So that would be a regulatory function. The UX would be across government. The predictive analytics would apply to kind of high-value targets.
Mm-hmm. So it seems like a system like this where things are distributed and, you know, we're talking about the government as a platform provider, it would also allow for more privatization of services and perhaps even competition that's, you know, not several years long contract base. Mm-hmm. Is that kind of part and parcel of this idea or?
Yes, it is, except both because privatization is kind of an ugly word these days. And because it's not exactly applicable in the sense that we think about privatization as the divestiture of a public responsibility to the private sector. I'm thinking more in terms of how does one blend the talents of nonprofit and for-profit actors under the control and management of the city. So they say to the city, I'm going to control pricing. I'm going to control access. I'm going to control route structure or whatever. But I'm not necessarily going to be in the business of running the taxis, running the Ubers, running the software system, right? I mean, so I think there will be more competitive opportunities for nonprofit and for-profit high-value actors, but inside a network that's managed pretty carefully by the city or the county or the state, and therefore it looks more like to me a true public-private partnership than a pure privatization.
Mm. So as I was reading through some of this, I was reminded of the after the Affordable Care Act was passed, part of it was a mandate that hospitals and care providers move to digital record keeping. Knowing some people who worked at local hospitals, they moved to some systems that essentially handled all that. And a lot of them were very unhappy because the user interfaces weren't great. It made what they were doing a little bit more difficult, even though the promise of the system was to, make things easier. How do we avoid that in building these types of systems?
Well, I'm not sure it's totally avoidable. I went in for my annual physical checkup, on the doctor's. Instead of looking at me, he's looking down.
At the
computer. And after a while, he goes, I'm really sorry that I'm not talking to you, but I've got to get these – I'm required to enter these notes as we talk, right?
Right.
So – and then he complained about how difficult the system was to use, which, took a substantial part of our total appointment time for him to tell me about the computer system. He's a good doctor. I think this will be an issue. In the – book, we talk about UX in two ways. One is the ways in which a resident engages with his or her government, right? Do they walk in? Do they app in? Do they call in? How easy is that? How do we use human-centered design techniques to make that easier? The second way we do that is to say, look, this UX needs to also extend to your own employees. How do they get this information? How do they use this information? What do they put in here? So you need to think about the user experience to your employees and then look at how that translates into the user experience, kind of retail user experience to the resident. And over the years, government's done a remarkably bad job of somebody comes up with a good idea, and I've been actually quite guilty of this, and then you just kind of impose it, right? And you say, mm-hmm. look, we just did a great favor for you. You've got your new tablet. You know, you've got all that information there. Go use it. Well, nobody's really actually kind of worked with a field worker about, well, yeah, but this adds time or this makes it more difficult. So I think the question is really, really insightful, and it will require more care in the design of the systems.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as the biggest impediments to this kind of this move? Is this something that's kind of inevitable with technological change, or is this something that's going to require efforts on the part of, you know, mayoral administrations the country over?
Well, I think the answer is both. I mean, it's inevitable eventually. I mean, only so long that people are going to tolerate a bureaucratic experience after they've personalized their Amazon order. I mean, right? I mean, we ought to be Amazoning government, and we're not. Mm-hmm. So that public pressure will increase. And as folks more and more are using mobile tools and other devices for the rest of their lives, they're going to want to use them to communicate seamlessly with the city. But these bureaucracies die hard, right? You know, and almost every city government in the U.S. today is set up with a transportation department, a public works department, a parks department, a fill-in-the-blank department. And you know, they're often populated with really good folks, but those folks are kind of captive of the systems in which they work. And if you say, But there may be information in the public works department that will help you explain why the underground pipe is causing the pothole to occur four times a year, right? Mm-hmm. Or there may be information in the school files that would help the caseworker understand that the child that she's looking at has been truant from school for three of the last 7 days. What's that mean, right? And so we have to figure out a way to kind of accelerate the permeability, the horizontal nature of the way we deliver services and break down those verticals. That will be a very slow process.
Well, Professor Stephen Goldsmith, thank you so much for coming on PolicyCast today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks you for your excellent questions. Good to be here.
PolicyCast is a production of Harvard Kennedy School. I'm Matt Cadwallader. That's Matt Cad on Twitter. Jacob Beiser provides technical and editorial support. We'd love to hear from you. Send us your thoughts via email to policycast@hks.harvard.edu. See you next week.